You're listening to MLB.com Extras, brought to you by MLB.tv. It's baseball everywhere.
Hey everyone, Tim McMaster here, taking you around the American League East for MLB.com Extras. We start with the Baltimore Orioles, who started the season 8-0, and our MLB.com Orioles reporter, Brittany Giroli. Brittany, we knew the Orioles weren't going to go 162-0, and finally on Wednesday night, they lose a game as the Boston Red Sox beat them. But what a start for this Orioles club to go 7-0. They come out of the box swinging the bats like I think everybody kind of thought they would, putting up plenty of runs, showing that power. What was most impressive about the 7-0 start to you?
Well, I think that lineup was really impressive. Obviously, their pitching was able to hold serve, but I still think there's more that they need to get out of that if they're going to continue to have success. I think Joey Rickard, the Rule 5 draft pick, having the success that he's had has been huge. And then, of course, Chris Davis with his hot start to the season after signing that record club record, 7-year, $161 million deal.
Yeah, when you sign those, you know, when you get players on those big deals, I guess it's a little easier when it's a guy you're comfortable with, but I think there's still those nerves that, man, we hope he gets off to a good start. And Davis has done that. And Mark Trumbo as well, I know in the Red Sox series before last night, has had some big hits, some power as well. Trumbo giveth and Trumbo taketh away a little bit, I guess, with his outfield play. But so far, it seems like the offensive pop has kind of outweighed his struggles in the outfield.
Yeah, and I'm glad you mentioned him because I totally forgot he did have a lot of really big hits for them in that Boston series. And if you look over the course of his career, Tim, he's been a really good hitter in April and May. So the trick is going to be, beyond May, getting him going and keeping him going. But certainly some really good at-bats, a really smart baseball player, a really good sound base runner as well.
When you look at the wins they've come up with and the pitchers they've faced, maybe that stood out to me as well. They've beaten David Price, Chris Archer, Odorizzi also with the Rays. I mean, they've played a tough schedule to get to 7-0, and they've played some of the better pitchers in the American League.
Yeah, and again, it'll be interesting to see what happens, you know, the second, third time they face these guys. I know the Orioles struggled. The weather was certainly a factor for some of these starters, but, you know, the offense is hitting in it as well. So for them to have those at-bats, it seems like, to me, they're working better at-bats, especially with two strikes. I know it was a big sore spot with the team last year was the fact that they were very much a strikeout or home run team, and they've been able to, at least in this first week or so, really produce runs, really work at bats, get guys on, and that's the reason you're not seeing all these solo homers. You're seeing guys drive in 2-3 runs because the guys in front of them or behind them are doing an excellent job of getting on base.
The offense obviously has taken the headlines, but you mentioned the pitching's been good enough, and the bullpen's been good as well. The bullpen was expected. Have the starters surprised you at all with how effective they've been early on through a week and a half?
No, I think it kind of gets lost in the shuffle that they haven't been all that good.
Okay.
You look at it, their ERA's been okay, but they're only averaging, I think it's pretty much 5 innings to start, which to me, you can't sustain. You're going to really wear through that bullpen very quickly, and they know that. And Buck knows that. He said it last night after the game to us, that they're going to have to go deeper. They don't have the off days they had and the rainouts they had in the first few games. So it was nice that they were effective, but they need to get deeper into these games. So I wasn't too surprised with the starting pitching. They didn't blow me away by any means.
Brian, pretty good start for the Yankees to the 2016 season. As we record here, 4-2, and they've had some good performances, some guys getting off to hot starts, a little bit of everything. Let's start with Tuesday night's game, a good win over a rival team in the Blue Jays. And, you know, these games in April, everybody tends to overlook and say it's just April, but they all count the same. And when they're within the division, I think that makes them a little bit bigger. And when you look at that game last night, it could have gone the other way. Tanaka, 54 pitches through a couple of innings, but he battles his way through 5, and they're able to come up with some big hits late.
Yeah, and I think that seeing who it came against is meaningful for this team. You know, the difference between the Yankees and the Blue Jays winning the division last year was their head-to-head record, and the Yankees lost 13 out of the 19 meetings with Toronto last year, but it's a new year, and they're off to a good start this year. Obviously, that was a tight, well-played game They got a bloop hit from Jacoby Ellsbury that gave him the lead. Brian McCann hit a home run that tied the game. And it's kind of a continuation of what you've seen this season. The starters aren't going particularly deep for the Yankees, at least through the first one and a half turns of the rotation. But the bullpen has been lights out. You had a big outing by Johnny Barbato, Jason Shreve, Dellin Betances, Andrew Miller, another four hitless innings. So bullpen more than doing its job. And, I mean, it's basically working the way the blueprint was. You're hoping that the starters would give you five or six, and then you would know that the bullpen could lock it down.
Yeah, and as good as the bullpen has been, obviously no Aroldis Chapman yet, but eventually he's going to get there. And he threw his first game down in Tampa. How did that go for Chapman?
Yeah, those poor minor league kids who are going to have to face this guy for a month. Three up, three down for Chapman. So he's on the comeback trail. You know, he obviously cannot play in a game where admission is charged until May 9, so he's going to be down there for quite a while. But the Yankees believe that all systems go. He's just down there at the minor league complex in Tampa. And if things continue the way it is, Johnny Barbato was talking about it last night, it's going to be a pretty lockdown bullpen when you figure whoever's going to be the sixth or seventh inning guys, and then you're going to have the Tances and Miller and Chapman. I mean, it's going to push everybody back. And, I mean, that's just a dominant relief situation. And that's what Brian Cashman was thinking about when he looked at his rotation. He saw that he may have a bunch of five or six inning starters on his hands. So how do you shorten that game? And this is how they're thinking they can do it.
Yeah, if you're going to beat the Yankees, you better get to them early this season, it seems like. Okay, big home run from Brian McCann in that game as well. He tied the game before Ellsbury got the go-ahead hit. He also kind of dodged a possible injury as well, and that would have been terrible news for this Yankees team.
It really would have. You know, McCann is off to a great start this year. He's got 10 runs scored. Obviously, a big home run against Toronto. They really can't afford to lose him. He's a very important part of this team, both on offense and defense. So they breathe a sigh of relief. The fluoroscope, which is downstairs here at Rogers Center. You know, every time we come up here, it seems like there's a reminder that they don't have an X-ray in Canada here, not at the ballpark anyway. So they sent him for the fluoroscope. They took a look, didn't see a fracture. That's good news for the Yankees. He had some blood drained from it. Looked pretty painful. He was limping around pretty good in the clubhouse, but he's just relieved that there's no fracture. So, hey, if they have to send him for more tests, they will do that. But at this point, they're thinking he may just be able to sit out one day and could be back in there for the series finale on Thursday.
You talked about the bullpen and how good it's been. And one of the pieces out there is Ivan Nova, who's kind of, I guess you could say, adjusting to life in the bullpen. Here's a guy who started most of his career. It seems like he's taking to it, though, and he has a pretty positive attitude about going out there to the pen.
Yeah, I think he's seen enough over the last few years that, you know, how many teams in the majors go through a season with just five starting pitchers? So he was in a situation last year. He was reminding me yesterday. We were talking a little bit about it. And he was sent to the bullpen, but Tanaka had some kind of setback, and all of a sudden, Nova was back in the rotation. So these things can come up easily. He said something. He said he was looking at it kind of like a little vacation to be out there in the bullpen. So he's down there. He's getting his work in. He's kind of preparing just the way he would as a starting pitcher, doing his runs and getting his between start throwing in. Joe Girardi says he'd like to get him in to start an inning. He wouldn't like to bring him in mid-inning, but if the situation dictates that he will. So Nova's pretty much up for anything at this point. He knows that at some point, sooner or later, there will be an opportunity to start, whether it's to come back in the rotation or if the Yankees need a fifth starter or a sixth starter or a spot guy to come in there. Anything could really happen. So I think that his job is just to be ready and keep a good attitude, because the decisions are pretty much out of his control.
Obviously, he wanted to win that fifth starter job. It goes to CC Sabathia instead. And CC, in his first regular season start since, obviously, the way last season ended with him making his final start and then ending up doing the rehab and everything, real good. Six innings. He gives it, well, maybe real good's a stretch, but six innings, four hits, three earned runs. When you're looking at a fifth starter, that's good enough, I would say, right? If they can get that from CC,
I'll go one further. I'll say real good. I mean,
okay,
considering the lineup that he was going against in Detroit, that right-handed heavy mashing lineup, you know, it was easy to look at that matchup on paper and say the Tigers are going to eat CC for lunch. And he really battled. He did a great job. He's the first Yankee starter to complete six innings this year. So there's a lot of reasons to root for CC this year. I think that on a personal level, everybody's looking for him to continue to come back from what he came back from, the rehab that he went through over the offseason. But, you know, Brian McCann said after that game, he said if CC can pitch like this, he's still got enough know-how and competitiveness to win a lot of games in this league. So the stuff is obviously diminished. He's not going to be throwing 96, 97 miles an hour, but he can win what he has right now. At least that's what Brian McCann and the Yankees believe.
Gregor, the Blue Jays, I guess not really off to the start they were hoping to get off to. They did win their first two games, but then they had that four-game skid, and it's been a tough schedule as well when you look at the division and all the games in the division, and that's not stopping anytime soon. You look at this month for the Blue Jays and 17 straight AL East games to start things off. That seems like a rare occurrence in baseball.
Yeah, it does, and it really kind of drives home the importance of the Blue Jays needing to avoid more of a slow start than they've already gotten off to. I mean, you look at the lineup, and there's been some struggles there. I think it's only a matter of time before that turns around. A lineup as good as that's not going to continue to struggle for very long. And then the bullpen has been a major issue for this team. It's kind of, reminiscent of last year a little bit, last April when they had so many problems. And, the expectation was that the bullpen was going to be a strength this season. So far, it's been anything but. And I think it's just a matter of needing to get some of those guys right down there and also trying to find the right roles and the right mix to find out what exactly is going to work for this ball club before they put themselves in too big of a hole.
I think it was last week on this podcast that we were talking about Brett Cecil's crazy streak and how good he had been from the second half of last year after he was one of the guys who really did struggle early on last year, losing the closer's role, and he seems to be back in a little bit of a funk here again. Is he just a slow starter?
Well, it certainly seems to be going in that direction. I mean, last year was a bit of a unique case because he missed so much time in spring training and he had a shoulder injury. This year, he was completely healthy, and just talking to him after that first scoreless appearance that you're talking about, he was talking about how it was night and day from a year ago and how much better he feels this year. And so far, the results just haven't been there with the exception of that first outing. And I think a lot of the issues is that, there's been a very slight drop in his velocity on his fastball. But the bigger issue is that he hasn't been able to command that pitch very well. And when hitters know, with Cecil in particular, if they know he can't locate that fastball, they're going to sit on the curveball. And if they know the curveball's coming, they can also read that pitch as being in or out of the zone fairly easily. And Cecil's a guy who needs to get swings and misses on curveballs that are in the dirt, things like that, in order to be effective. And so far, he just hasn't been able to get that. So guys have been sitting on that curveball, and it seems like they know what's coming. And that's really led to a lot of issues here over his last few outings.
So the bullpen has certainly had its struggles. The rotation, we've seen some really good things. I mean, Marcus Stroman has been Marcus Stroman, and I think what we expected from him. Aaron Sanchez, a couple of starts now. I know they were both no decisions, but when you look at what he did in his first start against the Rays, real good. And then against the Yankees, they lose the game late on Tuesday night, but Sanchez, very good again.
Yeah, to me, that's the biggest positive by far that the Blue Jays can take out of this first week and a half of the season. In a way, it's almost like everything is upside down with this team right now. The bullpen was supposed to be the strength. It's the weakness. The rotation was supposed to be a weakness, and it's been a strength. But that's something that Jays can build off of because the rotation was something that there were a lot of question marks going into the year, especially with a guy like Aaron Sanchez. And I think he's passed the first couple tests this year pretty well. He was a guy who last year struggled with his command. And this week was a great test for him against the Yankees because they're the most patient lineup in baseball, and they really force you to throw strikes, and they have a lot of left-handed hitters, which is something that Sanchez struggled with last year as well. And he put forth – it was a battle for him at times, but he put forth another really solid outing, and that's something the Blue Jays have to be really encouraged by because if he can be that mid-level type starter that they think he can be, it just makes that rotation so much better with guys like Dickey and Stroman and Estrada – They can predict a little bit more easily what those guys are going to do.
And we saw Estrada on Sunday. Really a big start considering the slump the team had been in, losing four straight. They avoid the sweep thanks to him stepping up in a big way. And we saw this from Estrada a year ago. Certain days, he's just pretty much untouchable. And on Sunday, seven scoreless innings, five hits. He struck out eight along the way. When he's locked in and has that stuff, it seems like he's as good as anybody in the game.
Yeah, it continues to be surprising, even though maybe it shouldn't. I think it's going to be surprising from the next little bit if he's able to keep this up, just because so many people were predicting a regression from last year. And, you know, he's obviously out to prove that that's not going to be the case. And after that game, John Gibbons just said that was vintage Marco Estrada. And it really was. He's not an overpowering guy by any means at all. But he, you know, he mixes up the speeds really, really well, and he's got great command. And it's one of those starts where I think a lot of times the opposing hitters are kind of walking to the dugout, kind of shaking their head, thinking that they should have done a lot more with the at-bat than they did. But that's something we saw from Estrada all of last year, and it's going to be interesting to see how well he can keep that up this season. But yeah, you're right. When he's on, I mean, the frustration level in the opposing dugout is almost funny to watch, because I think guys have a hard time explaining why they can't do more, because he's that type of pitcher. He's not going to overpower you, but he's going to force you into getting yourself out, and that's what we saw so far in his first outing.
The reigning American League MVP, Josh Donaldson, kind of starting off right where he let off in 2015. He's been tremendous despite the injury in week one. He hurts the calf, and he has to DH for a couple of games. It didn't seem to affect him at the plate at all, though. That first game DHing, he had the grand slam against the Boston Red Sox. A calf strain, I feel like there's some concern there, though, because that's one of those injuries that can linger a little bit. He played third base again for the first time on Tuesday night. What was his thoughts after getting back out there on the field again for the first time?
Well, he's not running 100% yet. I mean, you could see that this week. He's still having a little bit of trouble, still holding back a little bit when it comes to running. But for the most part, he's good to go. And you're right, the calf issue can linger. But it's something that's lingered with him before. You know, this is something we didn't really know about the time. But, you know, he said that this is something that he dealt with most of last year as well. And he's just the kind of guy who's very hard to get out of the lineup. The only reason we really found out about it this time was because it became so bad in that game in Tampa Bay that he couldn't make it up the first baseline. Other than that, it probably would have gone unnoticed. And I think that's something he dealt with last year. He's dealt with that issue going back to Oakland as well. So he's familiar with it. It's certainly not an encouraging sign. But when you're talking about Donaldson, you're also talking about one of the most durable guys in the game. You know, the last 3 years, he played 158 games in each season. It takes a lot to get him out of the lineup. I fully expect him to continue playing through this. And, you know, I think the Blue Jays might look to give him an occasional start at DH now, just to kind of get him off his feet a little bit more than he otherwise would. But for the most part, I think it's all go for Donaldson from this point on.
Ian, I think a week ago on this podcast, we talked about how the season opener couldn't have gone better. David Price pitching well, Craig Kimbrell closing out the game for the Red Sox, and everything was great. Now we're going to switch things up a little bit and talk about the home opener, in which David Price had a really tough inning, and then Craig Kimbrell really bad late, giving up the 3-run homer, one big blast from the Orioles. Let's start with Price, because it was the one big inning, and it seems like that's something that has kind of gotten him before in his career. Is there any explanation for him at certain times in his career just being able to get bitten by that one bad inning?
Yeah, you know, I haven't really watched him long enough to be able to get a real sense of that. But, you know, he did acknowledge that when he falters, it's usually just the one bad inning. And, yeah, it was certainly a stunning turn of events on opening day. It was such a great pregame ceremony with David Ortiz's daughter singing the national anthem while David Ortiz was, you know, he had some tears watching that. He didn't know that was going to happen. And then the great ceremony where they brought out Bill Russell and Bobby Orr, fellow Boston sports icons, to throw out the first pitch with David Ortiz. You know, it all seemed magical. And they come out and score three in the first inning, and they're turning double plays on defense, and it just seemed like it was going to be one of those great days. And then, you know, David Price makes a few bad pitches in the third inning, and the whole day just really changed. And then, you know, nobody saw that coming from Kimbrell either. But, you know, I think that sometimes when these guys come to Boston, they're not used to pitching with that kind of adrenaline that crowd gives you. And I just think it takes a little bit of adjustment sometimes. I don't think either of these two guys are going to be fazed by the market. I think maybe it's just an adjustment. Maybe they were too hyped up. You know, you've seen David Price get too hyped up in the playoffs before too, so I think it might be that kind of thing, and I think that he'll settle in and have a real nice season for this team.
I was actually amazed to see that Craig Kimbrell had never allowed a 3-run homer in his entire career. Now, obviously, as a closer, you're coming in with nobody on, so it's a little difficult to give up a 3-run homer, but How much of this is the Red Sox kind of in a funk right now, and how much is just the Baltimore Orioles playing great baseball and just hitting the ball all over the ballpark? Is they're undefeated?
Yeah, Tim, it's a perfect combination of a team that is still trying to find its way a little bit in the Red Sox and a team that, you know, has, it seems like every year I think we have this team that comes out that's just blazing and clicking on all cylinders. And you always want that to be your team, but this year it's the Orioles. And, yeah, they're certainly playing with a lot of confidence. I think they came into the season with a chip on their shoulder because, look, everybody was mentioning the Toronto Blue Jays. Everyone was mentioning the Boston Red Sox. A lot of people are mentioning that great bullpen of the New York Yankees. And, you know, not a lot of people are mentioning the Orioles. And they felt that they had made quite a few moves here coming into the season. So they were saying, hey, why not us? And I think they've really come out with that chip on the shoulder. And, you know, the Red Sox, yeah, it's been bad timing for them facing the Orioles.
Yeah, and the Orioles' starting pitching has been just good enough, which was the big concern there for Baltimore. And, man, we knew they could swing the bat, and they have done that, and they have hit for power, which is what we kind of expected. You mentioned the celebration on opening day for David Ortiz, Bobby Orr, and Bill Russell, and Ty Law there, and then his old teammates came out, Jason Varitek, Tim Wakefield, and Pedro Martinez. The Red Sox have kind of gotten to a new level, I feel like, as far as celebrations go. I used to always say the Yankees had a special knack for doing this kind of celebration, but I feel like the Red Sox, starting with the World Series and breaking the curse, have really geared things up, and you'd be hard-pressed to find a team that can do a celebration on the field better than the Boston Red Sox.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, I thought they hit on all the right notes the other day. You know, I thought it was powerful, but not too overbearing and not too schmaltzy. I thought it was really a great ceremony. If you're anybody from Boston and you see Bill Russell and Bobby Orr come onto the field, you know, that just stirs up a lot of emotions right there for fans of a certain age. And even, you know, I didn't see really Bill Russell or Bobby Orr play. I'm a little young for both of them. But even for me, that stirs up emotions because you know what those guys meant to the city and to their sports. And, yeah, I think that you know, to have David Ortiz go out in his final opening day and share a moment with them, I thought that was, that was pretty cool.
Absolutely. And Ortiz off to a great start to the season, a guy that sometimes starts slow, but so far not in 2016, another home run on Tuesday night. He seems pretty much locked in. And here's a guy who struggled during the spring, as he often does, and said, I think his quote was, "When the lights turn on, I'll be there," and he certainly has been. Do you think this is going to continue? He seems like he's just in that zone where his final season is going to be a special one.
Yeah, Tim, you know, just watching David Ortiz take batting practice, watch him hit in the games, he doesn't look any different than he's looked in the last 5 years. I mean, he might be 40, but the bat speed is the same, the power is the same. And if anything, he looks more locked in right now. Like you said, he's not usually, a lot of times he's not a fast starter, but this year he's come out blazing. And this is good because, look, the Red Sox, they need him. They need him to be that centerpiece. He still provides that real fear factor in this lineup right now. And, yeah, it's been a great sign to see him come out the way he has. And you hope, he can't expect him to hit this clip all year, but you hope that he's going to go out with another strong season. There's no reason I don't think that he will.
If there was a big concern for this team heading into the season, it was, we've talked about it throughout the offseason, would there be enough after David Price in that rotation? And you've seen some good, some bad, but one glaring thing I think is Clay Buchholz. First outing, a bad first inning, and that's something we've seen from Red Sox pitchers the last couple of years. And then another tough outing on Tuesday night where at times he looked a little better. But through two outings, the ERA is 10 right now for Clay Buchholz. If that stays that way, this team is not going to be in contention. Is that fair for me to say, or am I going too overboard with Clay?
That's fair, but I think for anyone who sort of, if you watched the game really closely last night, I thought that Clay Buchholz actually looked a lot better last night than he did in Cleveland. And what happened, it was a crazy night at Fenway, the way that wind was swirling around. So what you had was, in the key part of the game, Clay Buchholz was facing Mark Trumbo in the sixth. And he gives up a foul pop-up that either Blake Swihart or Hanley Ramirez could have caught. Swihart was the one who tried to make the play, and the wind kind of took it a couple feet away from him, and he missed it. You know, four pitches later in that at-bat, Trumbo hits about a 415-foot home run. And J.J. Hardy also hit a very much of a windblown 310-foot home run down the line and right against Buchholz. Hardy hit another one later in the game after Buchholz left. So I actually think Buchholz was pretty good last night. But it's just Red Sox fans don't have the patience for it right now, just because the pitching, like you said, it hasn't been good the first seven games of the season. So you're not willing to say, oh, you know, he was better than the line score indicating. But watching it objectively, I really did think that was the case last night, where Buchholz actually pitched pretty good, but it gets to a point where it's frustrating that, you know, this team continue. You know, Stephen Wright's the only pitcher on this team who's pitching the seventh inning right now this season. He's your number five starter, so I think that just gets frustrating at times. So hopefully Joe Kelly tonight we'll get them on a good foot. And you got to remember that small sample size at the beginning of the season, because look, I remember last season, which obviously did not turn out to be a good season for the Red Sox at all. First turn through the rotation last year, everybody was great. The next 157 games, not so much. So I think you'd rather, if you could trade that this year and be lousy the first seven games through and then be good the rest of the season, I think anybody would take that.
Bill, look at the Rays through the first week, 2-4, but man, the schedule makers certainly didn't do the Rays any favors early in the season as they open up with the Blue Jays, Orioles, now the Indians, a talented pitching staff is up next. You just kind of battle out the storm, right, when you start a season up against good teams like this?
Yeah, and the starting pitching really hadn't gotten off to a quick start, so I think that's hurt a little bit more than normal. Just kind of feeling their way, it's not panic time, but, it's kind of interesting to see them get started and see how things fall into place. In fact, one thing that's already struck me as kind of interesting, was kind of down to the end at spring training, whether they were going to take an extra reliever or an extra bench player because of the starting the season with a four-man rotation. And turns out they made the right call going with eight relievers because, I don't think the extra players would have gotten in. They faced so much right-handed pitching. He's been having a hard time getting the right-handers in.
Yeah, and that's going to continue. They bounce back after dropping the first to the Blue Jays to win games 3 and 4 of that series. And then, man, nobody can beat the Orioles right now, the undefeated Baltimore Orioles as we record this. So no shame in losing some to them. You would think they'll get things going. The starting pitching will get things going. And there's some great matchups coming up this week when you look at the Indians and the Rays going head-to-head. Tuesday, it's Matt Moore and Corey Kluber, then Drew Smyly versus Carrasco on Wednesday, and then Chris Archer back out there against Danny Salazar on Thursday. These are two still fairly young rotations and two of the better rotations in baseball. Are you looking forward to just some great pitching this week?
Yeah, I think we're lined up for it. I know last year, obviously Carrasco was here, and he came within one out of a no-hitter here at Tropicana Field, so I'm sure everybody will be talking about that a little bit pregame today. But I look for Archer to get back on track. And, as I've told you in previous conversations, I think Smyly was the best-looking pitcher all spring training. So, he got burned on Saturday night when he warmed up in the bad weather. And then the game got postponed. So that kind of interrupted the flow of the rotation. And he got put back in there after Moore, which pushed Archer back.
Yeah, kind of juggling things early on. It's too bad, too, with the Rays obviously playing in the Dome and then the one series early on where they're outside on the road and they do run into the rain. Bill, you have an article on the website right now about the Rays. You're calling it the long blue line, which I think is a great term and a term you coined yourself. But talking about the kind of pass me down from starter to starter and leadership in this team, in this rotation from year to year. Obviously Chris Archer is the guy now, but it's just a fascinating thing. And it's kept the Rays competitive through all these years, hasn't it?
Yes, it has. And I was able to get a pretty good look at it. I know I wrote a book with James Shields several years ago called September Nights. And one of the parts of the book, he talks a great deal about how his cousin, Aaron Rowand, the former major leaguer, really got his, got him on the page, the correct page as far as fitness went. In fact, I remember the great story. He was out in Las Vegas, and Rowan told him to show up at a certain time, and he was like a minute late, and he told him to get out of there. He was embarrassing him. And, he said after that, he was there on time all the time. And I think there was kind of a relaxed approach to you know, fitness and being prepared and the whole bit when Shields arrived here. And so he's kind of the, you know, he's kind of the daddy of it all.
When you look at the team right now, and obviously they haven't had that need for the fifth starter, and with the rain, who knows when they'll need a fifth starter, Bill, but eventually it'll be Erasmo Ramirez who's in the bullpen right now.
Oh, no, not exactly.
No, not definitely?
No, because what's going to happen, they're probably going to need it either. They'll probably either go Friday or Saturday night this weekend.
Okay.
And what they're talking about doing, it depends where Erasmo is. They're not going to – if they need Erasmo, say if they need him during the Indian series, he might not be ready. So they might call somebody, you know, from minor leagues, or they might do a bullpen day where they just use, you know, a boatload of relievers the whole game. But it definitely is. I know if it had been the 13th, as they kind of thought it was going to be, probably the guy would have been. They probably would have brought up Matt Andrees, but which was his day to pitch. So they've got a lot of different options, but we'll wait and see.
So, but as you look at it now, when eventually they have to settle into that 5-man rotation, will Ramirez be the guy?
I think so.
Yeah.
But, you know, you never know with these guys. Who knows? They might decide that they like Ramirez in the bullpen, and they might bring up somebody from, you know, AAA Durham. I mean, there are a great many, you know, talented young arms they have in the, you know, at AAA. So I would expect it to be Ramirez once they finally do that. But, again, they've talked about do they want to waste the time stretching him out to become a starter again. So that could be the big surprise later, is that they don't make him the starter and they come with something else.
And that's what I was actually going to say, is that is a factor, I would think. The longer he pitches out of the bullpen, the more removed he is from the starting, and it does become an issue of stretching him out again.
And add to that he's been really good out of the bullpen. So I don't think it's an automatic that he goes back in there. You know, who knows? They could have made some assurances to him that is the case. But, you know, we'll see. Probably when they go back to it full time will be mid-May sometime. So I think there's a lot of options there, but I'm not positive that, you know, it's just going to be Erasmo.